This is one in a series of podcasts produced by the Departments of Classics and Judaic Studies at the University of Cincinnati. In these podcasts, you'll be hearing faculty and graduate students from these departments and from other nearby institutions discussing aspects of ancient Mediterranean culture relating to Qumran and the Dead Sea Scrolls. We're talking today about something quite important for the Dead Sea Scrolls and for documents like them, the scrolls themselves. Andrew Connor is a historian here at the University of Cincinnati, and he works on texts like this from Egypt. Andrew, how did people in the ancient Mediterranean write down their books?
Well, book might not be the right word. They had a number of different methods for writing things down, depending on their need, but the book format, called the codex, only really took off in late antiquity, after the creation of the Dead Sea Scrolls. The most common means of writing in the Mediterranean was on sheets of papyrus, a sort of paper made from the Egyptian papyrus reed, from which our word paper comes. It was convenient in that it was flat, durable, and if you needed more, you could glue another sheet at the bottom of the current one. If you attach enough of these, you can roll them up and you get a scroll. In some areas, especially those far from Egypt, one could also incise letters into wax tablets, which survive especially from Roman forts in England, or scratch them onto broken pieces of pottery. If you think of carving letters with a rock into a piece of glass, you're on the right track. The people then weren't any different than we are now. They loved writing. We find graffiti everywhere, from the walls of Pompeii to carved all over temples and statues in Egypt.
Well, what about parchment? Wasn't that used for most of the Dead Sea Scrolls?
Right you are, and I'm glad you mentioned this. Remember that most papyrus came from Egypt. If you're at war with Egypt, you run the risk of running out of paper. When Pergamon, a small kingdom in modern Turkey, was at war with Egypt during the Hellenistic period, their need for a reliable, cheap writing surface led them to discover parchment, which is named after the city. Parchment is made out of dried animal skins, a far cry from the reeds of papyrus. If prepared correctly, animal skins can offer a decent surface, and this reduced the need for expensive papyrus.
I guess parchment won't be a popular choice for vegans, so these animal skins were used for the Dead Sea Scrolls?
Well, not exactly. The Dead Sea Scrolls are obviously not Greek administrative documents. The parchment used for Dead Sea Scrolls was instead created according to a somewhat similar Jewish tradition known as gavil. It is still the preferred method today for Torah scrolls. Whoever made the scrolls for Qumran, they were very, very good. Some of the scrolls are extremely thin and very delicate, as the scholars studying the fragments found to their chagrin.
So we know what they're writing on, but how are they writing? They couldn't exactly pop out to the Dead Sea Five and Dime to pick up some pens.
You know, this is a question I get asked a lot. Up until relatively recently, people still made their own ink. In the 18th and early 19th centuries, people collected the trimmings of their wicks to grind up and make ink out of. We have spells from Egypt, really recipes for magic, calling for ink made from special plants or insects. The Dead Sea Scrolls, though, have a lot in common with the Declaration of Independence, believe it or not. They were both written on parchment, and they were both written with gall ink. If you go outside and find the nearest oak tree, you might see little balls or apple-shaped growths on the branches. These are caused by a type of wasp laying eggs inside the tree and represent the tree's attempt to fight off the infection. If you take off these balls, grind them, and mix them with a few ingredients for consistency, you get a nice ink. You can put some of that in a container and use a sharpened reed, and you're ready to write.
So let's talk about something a little more modern. We know how the Dead Sea Scrolls were found, but you work on preserved texts from antiquity as well. How did these survive until today outside of caves?
You know, Egypt's a really fabulous place. We do have scrolls from a few other places, but they're usually preserved through fire. The Herculaneum papyri, for instance, were scorched during the eruption of Mount Vesuvius, and this preserved the insides. Like a good steak, I suppose. In Egypt, though, it's a little different. Once you get away from the Nile, a few hundred yards in some places, things get dry, bone dry. If you bury something organic, whether it's paper or clothing or a person, in the sand, they are protected from moisture and from air and can sit, perfectly preserved, for a very long time. The Dead Sea Scrolls and the papyri I study are about 2,000 years old, but we have some that are a lot closer to 5,000 years old, from Old Kingdom Egypt. These texts might not be quite as famous as the Dead Sea Scrolls, but they are really exciting and important. We've found lost works by Aristotle, Menander, and Sappho, and even an order signed by Cleopatra. To have the handwriting of someone so famous, that's pretty fun. They also give us smaller details. We have some really charming letters, and unfortunately, some sad, touching ones. Without 2,000 to 4,000 years of filters selecting out what was worth saving, the texts available cover a really broad range. There's no better way to get at everyday life for people from the king to the baker. Most of these papyri were found either in the course of archaeological excavations or by illegal digging and robbing. Unfortunately, the latter category really robs us of important information, which is why having the context, like we do at Qumran, is so very exciting. Like the Dead Sea Scrolls, these documents are not flat and prepared for us to read. They usually aren't quite so much trouble as the Dead Sea Scrolls, but the work of unfolding these texts without breaking them into dust, remember they are very old and very dry, is left to professionals. They are able to carefully prepare and preserve them, and then we all get to argue over where certain fragments might go in the reconstruction. It can be sort of like assembling a jigsaw puzzle of a book we haven't read yet.
Well, great. We certainly know a bit more about ancient writing now. Where can people go if they want to learn a little more?
The Ancient Lives Project is a great introduction to a lot of this. It can be found at ancientlives.org. Not only does it have a great little history of Oxyrhynchus, the most important site for papyrologists, but anyone can try their hand at reading papyrus fragments, some of which may never have been read since they were thrown out 2,000 years ago. While it's not the same material, of course, it will give you an appreciation of the really difficult work the researchers had reconstructing the Dead Sea Scrolls.
AncientLives.org. Got it. Thank you, Andrew, for an introduction to a part of the Dead Sea Scrolls we might not otherwise think about.
This concludes the podcast, but you can find others in this series at our website, classics.uc.edu/podcasts, or look us up on iTunes and leave a review on our Facebook page, facebook.com/uc.classics.outreach. To learn more about our outreach program of public lectures, email outreach@classics.uc.edu. To learn more about the exhibit, Dead Sea Scrolls, Life and Faith in Ancient Times, at the Cincinnati Museum Center, opening November 16, 2012, go to cincymuseum.org/dead-sea-scrolls. These podcasts have been made possible by the support of a Society Outreach Grant from the Archaeological Institute of America. For more information, you can visit their website, archaeological.org.